All kinds of studies have been made with regard to factors which motivate people to live as they do. We've already covered enough ground in this program to establish the fact that people are responsible for their personal lives, barring some act of God or government, catastrophe or war that might intervene to change things, permanently or temporarily. For example, a lot of my friends, many of them very good friends of mine, were killed during World War II when they were in their 20s and 30s. The lives of others have been unalterably modified by injury or serious illness. But for most of us, we have our health, which is the natural inclination of all nature, and we have our lives to live. Sometimes, believe it or not, that's a personal handicap. It often takes the physically handicapped to demonstrate for us the unlimited possibilities that exist as an option for those willing to set goals and stay with them until they're achieved. While the healthy among us often take the path of least resistance, I think it was Bill Veeck when he had the Chicago White Sox who said, "I don't want the natural athlete. I want a guy who'll go after the hard ones." It's the people in this world willing to go after the hard ones who achieve greatness. They're motivated. There's that word again. They're motivated to give the last ounce of themselves in the achievement of their goals. Now let's look at some facts of life. Only about 5% of the people achieve unusual success during their lives. These are the people who earn larger incomes, live in better neighborhoods, in better, larger homes, have better education, more of the good things of life, and make a correspondingly larger contribution to their communities. They tend to speak better English and send their kids to better schools. There are always exceptions to any rule, and there are many exceptions to this 5% group. I know a man who's head of one of the largest, best-known companies in the United States who can hardly put 10 words together in their proper order. If murdering the English language were a misdemeanor, he'd be on death row. Yet he has mansions, yachts, private jets, the works. Why, with no more than perhaps a sixth-grade education and the apparent determination to assiduously avoid any improvement to it, has this man and his family enjoyed such spectacular financial success? Answer: he knows how to serve the people. His organization serves millions of people every day of the week. He's worked hard all of his life to build the great organization he heads, and he's done a fine job of it. So he can buy $3 million yachts and pay cash for them. And when he wants to go someplace in a hurry, there's his Gulfstream 3 warmed up and ready for him when his chauffeur takes him to the airport. But most people in that top 5% fit the earlier description. Many of them are not rich by the standards of our mega-millionaire friend, but they're in the top 5% of American incomes. They're set for life, and they, as a group, tend to enjoy themselves very much. They play a better game of golf or tennis than most of the country's hackers, and they love their lifestyles. Now, a child is born in the United States. The odds, because of the statistics we've been talking about, are 95-5 that he will not be born into this top 5%. Like most children, he'll soon take his environment for granted. Let's assume he's a boy, although it works the same way for a girl. It will save my having to say he or she all the way through this interesting example. He grows up accepting his environment, his world, and his world is his environment as it is. Without giving it a single thought, his environment becomes a natural part of him. Everything about his environment is a conditioning factor. The speech of his parents and relatives and neighbors becomes his speech. What he learns in school will have very little effect on it. That's why you hear grown-up men and women who've gone through the American school system saying such things as "ain't" and "where's it at?" They didn't learn those locutions in school. They were the habitual pattern of speech they heard in their environment. I know an attorney who still says "where's it at?" Anyone's speech habits are an immediate tip-off as to his upbringing. The only reason mine tend to be rather good is because from the time I was a small child, I wanted to be a writer, and words were of great interest to me. Words are the tools of a writer's trade, and a good writer will have a decent inventory of them and tend to keep them well-oiled and shining. I was the only person in our family so affected. The rest had other interests, education not being one of them. If the statistics were reversed, it would be wonderful. If 95% of the people were successful to the degree the 5% are, the odds of a child being raised by the right group would be reversed. But that's not the case. So our typical young man or young woman grows up to mirror his or her environment. He thinks as they think. He takes that life for granted. All the people he loves are in that group. It's his group, too. and if he doesn't come across some unusual motivation along the way, he'll become an indistinguishable part of it. He does that because it's the perfectly natural thing to do. Their goals, or the lack of them, become his goals. A nice house on a nice street, a steady job of some kind, a good, steady income, a good wife and good kids, and so the story goes. He operates on minimums all the years of his life. He never, except while playing in sports or getting ready for a date as a young man, gets out of low gear. It isn't necessary in the United States. This country's so affluent, so vital, and so perennially booming that people don't have to shift into second or third gear in order to meet average requirements. And neither do most of the people throughout the world. Nor should they have to if they don't want to. His wife, while their children are small, is the hardest working human being in our society. She has no 8-hour day or 5-day-a-week system. She works 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, and according to a recent survey, if she had to do it all over again, she'd think twice about it. More than 50% of her number also hold down a regular paying job. She didn't know about the 5% either. No one ever said to this young man or this young woman, "Now look here, there are two very distinct groups of people in our society. They're in different layers of this socioeconomic pyramid." And here, the parent or teacher would have sketched a pyramid. "Now there's the top 5% who live and work in this top section here." And the person would have drawn a line under what represents the top 5% of the pyramid. "Now here's what we call the great middle class in America. It's divided into two main groups. The upper middle class," another line would be drawn on the pyramid, "and the lower middle class. The United States has the largest middle class of any country in the world. And then down here at the bottom, these few lower layers, these are the people who, because of 1,000 perfectly good reasons, need to be helped by all the rest of us. They have difficulty coping. Many of them are too old or sick to help themselves. We have some 25 million functional illiterates," and so on. So these young people would see very clearly their options. It would be made clear to them that they have the freedom, thank God and our forefathers, to choose. They have the option, if they so choose, to live and work on virtually any layer of that pyramid. And it should be pointed out to them that the higher up on that pyramid you climb, the better the view, the fresher the air, the smaller the crowd. Now that's important to know, but it takes more effort to climb higher on a pyramid. It's much easier to settle for these lower layers. You don't have to learn so much, and so on. "Now," the parent or teacher might continue, "we live right here at this level on the pyramid." And then the parent or teacher might say, "It's not in the higher levels, but it's certainly not in the lower levels either. It's where I wanted to be. Your mother and I have been quite happy here." Well, I hope you get the picture. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we would be shown that when we're about 12 or 13? Wouldn't it be great to know we had that option and to see that pyramid? Well, this program is for the people who want to be in the top 5%, and it has a great deal of what we need to know to get into and stay in the top 5%. And while getting into the top 5% may be one's goal, it's good to remember that like any destination on planet Earth, there are a million ways to get there. Any road will do, any calling will do, if we go about it the right way. You can get rich hauling garbage, and many have already done so. It's a vital service to the community, but you have to go about it in a certain way. This young man, and now that we've brought his wife into the picture, this fine young woman, because of their past environment, their conditioning, come under the statistics of average Americans, because they live their lives in an average way. But of course, they're not really average people. With the right motivation, they could become very uncommon people and do very uncommon things. They could render much greater service to their community and reap a much more abundant harvest as a result, if they knew what we're talking about in this program. Now, what are the odds that they will ever come across Dr. Brand Blanchard's advice about happiness? Do they know what happiness is and where it comes from? Has either of them ever truly explored his and her potential strong point? What is it that your original genetic pattern makes you especially qualified to do, young man and young woman? What do you most want to do? What brings you the greatest joy? Do you know your rewards all the years of your life will be determined by the extent of your contribution, your service to others? Do you know why some people are paid $20,000 a week, while others are paid the minimum wage? There's an investment banker in Los Angeles who earns about $40 million a year. Do you know that as far as is known, there's no limit on earnings? What would you like to earn? How about $1,000 a week? That's $52,000 a year, or twice that. That's not all there is to living by any means, far from it, but it does pay the bills, and if you earn an income in the upper 5% of the population, there you are, in that top 5% of the pyramid that the sun hits first as the earth does its daily rollover act, and the sun is still shining on it later in the day when the rest of the plain is dark. It's nice up there. And shooting for it will bring out the best that's in you. You'll do more for others. You'll make a greater contribution. You'll give more to charities. You'll help more people. So how about it? There's a talk I'd like to give to young people. Some would say I'd stir discontent among them, but I would reply that discontent is the greatest motivator of them all, and it's responsible for every great boon to humankind, from running water in the inside toilet to the supermarket. A little discontent is a good thing, especially when it's discontent with ourselves. The effect of environment is an incalculably powerful force. The deepest craving of young people is to be liked by their fellow students. Acceptance and esteem in the eyes of their contemporaries is their deepest craving. So they begin to do what the other kids are doing, and the other kids begin doing what they're doing, and everyone acts just like everyone else. They dress alike. They talk alike. They laugh at the same things, even when it isn't funny. It's at this critical age that they begin to play not follow the leader. That'd be all right. The game they play is called follow the follower. Day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, these young, wonderful, impressionable people conform to one another. They never ask, are the people to whom I'm conforming qualified to lead me? It's belonging that's important. Belonging to the group. And that's the subtle trap that gets practically everybody. If we don't break out of that trap sooner or later, we'll end in it. Millions, no, billions do. It's astonishing how many adults never break out. We see them in their 50s and 60s, still playing to the wrong crowd, still trying to be one of the boys. Do you remember what Willie Loman said in Arthur Miller's great play, Death of a Salesman? He said, the important thing is to be liked. Willie Loman never grew up. He never knew who he was. His story is a modern tragedy. It's always been a tragedy. It's the story of the mob. When a person has no identity of his or her own, that person will seek to find that identity in a larger group. That's why joining groups of various kinds is so popular. In that way, we get a badge, a label that tells us what we are. Now we're properly labeled. This is not to say that successful men and women do not belong to organizations. They certainly do, and they make major contributions to their organizations. But they don't need the organization for identity. They're quite aware of who and what they are. And if their organizations did not exist, they would be successful, independent performers in society. They would never feel lost. Successful people follow independent paths. This is the important point to remember. At some point in their lives, they break away from the crowd and start on a path of their own. That's the adult, the intelligent thing for a human creature to do. In striking off on an independent path, they're not necessarily alone. It's just that they join a much smaller group of like-minded people. They can't take the whole crowd into that top 5%. The ancient Romans had their circus. Modern Americans have their television. It's far superior to the old Roman circus, and they don't even have to leave the comfort of their living rooms. It's true that there are many wonderful things on television, and an eclectic approach, that is, selecting those programs in which you're really interested, makes sense. But millions of families have the television sets on all day. They're mesmerized by it. And when one thinks of what they could be doing with some of that time, it makes one realize that it's much easier to win. One of the best things about getting in that top 5% is that as we get older, life need not become less interesting for us or more laborious. We become more productive as we approach our 60s and 70s and often many years beyond. And it's nice to grow older with all the goodies of life. It's more comfortable. One can spend one's winters in Florida or somewhere south of the equator and one's summers in the cooler, healthier climates. And one can enjoy all the benefits of the good life. But perhaps most importantly of all, one can say, I gave it my best, and I'm not through yet. It's been a wonderful experience, this holiday on Earth, and I've enjoyed it very, very much. Now let's see what we can do with the rest of it. Yes, I think it's actually easier to win. There's less competition up there where the view is so much better and the air is so fresh and clean. And it's almost never too late. For with a purpose, a worthy goal, and the motivation to reach those upper layers on the pyramid, a person can travel farther in a few years than he might otherwise travel in a lifetime.